All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio.
What's up, QLS listeners? This is Sugar Steve. Thank you for tuning in to part two of our interview with Paradise Gray. Dice is a leading hip-hop historian, a member of the X-Clan, and a true raconteur of the culture. Before this, though, listen to part one, where Paradise Gray discusses his Bronx upbringing, his earliest hip-hop memories, and making his inroads to help making the Latin Quarter a legendary 1980s landmark for rap. Take it away, Team Supreme and Paradise Gray.
All right, so the question I want to ask you is, what does this sound represent? You ready?
Yes. Go Stetson by Stetson Sonic.
Oh, yeah.
But what does it represent
when in the Latin Quarter? Yes.
That's the Latin Quarter. That was the Latin Quarter anthem.
Uh-huh.
Stetson Sonic.
But explain to our listeners what happens when this comes on.
See,
what does that mean for
an out-of-towner? It starts different than it used to start, too. You know, it used to start, go Brooklyn, go Brooklyn,
well, the B-side, go right, Brooklyn. Right.
And it was a signal for 50 Cent and the Brooklyn crew to go wild and start snatching chains and going wild in the club.
Which leads to my next question. And we've had every luminary of the Latin Quarter, from Special Ed to, like, literally everyone's come on the show, and I asked them the same thing. Knowing the likelihood of...
Why did they play it?
Knowing the likelihood of some about to break out, a punch, a snatch, chains, chaos, why would you risk your life for the love of hip-hop? Why would you risk your life for the...
And go there?
Yes.
Because if you didn't go there, you was a punk. Dude, let me explain something to you. First of all,
listen,
the Latin Quarter was all about location, location, location. It was right in the middle of Times Square, bro. Like, right in the middle of 48th Street between Broadway and 7th Avenue. Okay, this building is where the ball drops, right? Then you got a big empty space where they fill up during New Year's, right? Then there was another building that had the Coca-Cola bottle on it. Mm-hmm. The Latin Quarter was in that building.
Okay.
It was right in the middle of Times Square. The busiest place in New York City, bar none, mm-hmm. right? But what was about Times Square? Times Square was all about sex, yeah. drugs, and violence. Yeah. The American dream, as American as apple and cherry pie.
Okay.
If people don't understand nothing else, they understand sex, drugs, and violence. Sure. Let me tell you what I did at Latin Quarters. Okay, you had, in 1 hour, you have more traffic pass by our club than anywhere in the world, right? So I took advantage of that. I used to advertise ladies free before 11, right? And then I would make the ladies line go slow as hell. I will open the ladies' line at 10 to 11. So every male driving by Times Square.
See a bunch of women.
Girls outside.
A line of women going all the way around the block trying to get in free. And then I cheated again. I will walk that line and all the most beautiful women mm-hmm. and all the women who had the least clothes on, mm-hmm. I would bring them to the front of the line.
That's how it started.
I love this guy, man.
So, so next week, every chick in that line looked like Vanity Six.
Okay. Okay.
And everybody, I'm like, skirt! Oh, yo, I don't know where y'all going tonight, but I'm going there.
Who was your closest competition during this period between, when's the Latin the quarter beginning. Bracket? 85 to...
Really?
88?
You want to hear some crazy stuff?
Okay.
The real run of Latin quarter that I had was 86 to 88.
2 years?
It was 2.5 years. In 2.5 years...
That much impact?
We incubated the golden era of hip-hop. It seemed like it was 15 years.
I thought it was at least 7 to 8 years.
No. There was... The Africa Islam and other people would do shows at Latin Quarters, but it was not a hip-hop club. The Latin Quarters were the first and only legitimate hip-hop dance club. Our competition that opened a few months after us was Union Square. They had Red Alert before I did. But Red worked with me a little bit, but he worked at Union Square. He helped make that pop. But the difference was... It was 14th Street, which is closer to Brooklyn.
Curious. I'm curious. What is the going rate to hire Red Alert to be your Friday night DJ? And how long is he spending for?
Red Alert used to come directly off of the air at Kiss on Friday night and go directly to the Latin Quarter. And he would DJ for maybe, he would get to the club around 12 midnight. Like about 15 after 12, and he would DJ as much as he want. I had like 4-5 house DJs that also DJed there. So whenever Red took a break, you know, mm-hmm. the party kept going. But I don't know if I want to divulge Red's pay at this time.
Well,
but
put it this way,
it was the top of the game for the time.
Okay. Well, I just want to know, can you make a real living? Can you make a four-figure living or a high three?
I don't know about it.
He ain't taking no payola. That's no money on the side.
Okay.
Nah, but he already had a job at Kiss FM.
Yeah, station. Radio.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Well, I mean, he was the top DJ on the radio.
We now live in an era where a Diplo or Skrillex makes $2.5 million.
Tell me about it.
Or, you know, in the case of Pretty Lights, makes at least.
He'll make that every week.
These all white men?
Well, yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Pretty Lights.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty Lights only spends 10 times a year.
See what I'm
he
saying?
He must meet his price.
Exactly.
Or else he ain't coming. So thus he,
right.
I mean, it's a business.
That whole
but
dollar.
Remember, we were struggling to exist back in these days. Remember, hip hop, we was being dissed left and right.
Right.
You know, by our elders, Winfred Marsalis James M. Toomey and... Larry Blackman from Cameo, they were talking mad shit about hip hop.
Damn,
they were haters.
Yeah,
but James M. Toomey wound up being one of my best friends because my elder Edwin Byrd song brought us together. And I had a few conversations with James, and he understood what we were trying to do. And he started advising us and supporting us. But the biggest supporter that saved hip hop was none other than Elder Harry Belafonte, rest in peace, Mr. B.
Talk about it. Educate real quick, please.
Harry Belafonte produced Beat Street when all the other elders were shitting on us.
Mm-hmm.
Radio stations had taglines like, no rap,
no rap.
They did, yes.
And they would play our instrumentals and not play our vocals. Yeah. They were totally dissing us. We're not real musicians, we just steal their shit. You know, we don't sing. You know, all we do is that dibbit, the dibbit, the dibbit, the dibbit. When y'all gonna sing? You know, we were so disrespected.
What are your top five live performance moments at the Latin Quarter?
Wow, that's hard. Top five.
No particular one.
Roxanne Shanté, Biz Markie, and Big Daddy Kane.
Okay.
And then later, Big Daddy Kane on his own. I named my book No Half Steppin' because Big Daddy Kane was the epitome of the Latin Quarter.
What was it about him?
He had everything. He had the jewelry. He had the haircut. Mm-hmm. He had the look, the dance, the voice, the lyrical dexterity. And he had Marley Marl's beats. Unfuckwittable. Big Daddy Kane was nothing to mess with. You could not follow him at Latin Quarters.
You know? Was he feared or respected? In other words, if you're like watching the show, I'm assuming you're watching from the booth or whatever. I don't even know what the stage outlay is.
Put it this way. KRS-One dissed everybody. He dissed the Juice Crew, but he did not diss Big Daddy Kane. And Big Daddy Kane wrote some of Shantae's diss records against KRS-One.
Interesting.
But it was the Latin Quarter family. You know, they had become family at the LQ. We didn't go against each other at the LQ. It was like the only thing that we don't have now that we had back then is each other. If 20 artists got on stage and performed that night, at the end of the day, when the club is closing, all 20 of those artists that performed were still in the damn club. Nowadays, you put 5 artists on, mm-hmm. after they perform, they leave and take their people that came to see them with them. Mm. Not the LQ. We stayed from the time that club opened to the time it closed. Sometimes we close 8, 9 in the morning. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, it'd still be deep in the club whenever we close the door. We'll lock the door at 5. Ain't nobody else getting in. But if you already in there, man, the owner already bounced too, let's keep the party going.
It's 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
Now, I'm, you know, in the 90s and especially in the arts, like, I don't know of any club night existence without the fire marshal coming in to shut shit down. You know, the inspector coming to see. You guys never had those problems whatsoever?
No.
They didn't know you guys existed or?
Oh, they knew we existed. Yeah, we were right in the middle of Times Square. You couldn't help but notice us.
Well, who'd you know?
Well, we had plenty of police on our payroll. Nice. We had 6 undercover cops as security, mm-hmm. and a whole bunch more. And we had Mike Goldberg. He was such a brilliant businessman. I love that dude. And he gave a 19-year-old the keys to the club, bro. Could you imagine
that? You were 19 at the time?
I was 19 years old when I started running the Latin Quarter.
Did you have any experience whatsoever in terms of negotiating or any of those things?
Yeah. I used to be a street DJ. I was a hustler. I'm from Highbridge. You know what I'm saying? I was a pool shark.
But Latin Quarter is...
But I was hanging out way before Latin Quarter. I was learning from Sal Abatella at the Disco Fever. I'm watching him. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking to Junebug and Curtis Blow and all of them. I'm learning from Russell Simmons. You know, I'm working with Russell Simmons, Rush Productions, and Def Jam since 1983. You know, I'm in the studio with Run DMC, Curtis Blow, LL Cool J. I'm watching all of these things get created, and I'm learning every step of the way. I had Pete DJ Jones, who owned a bar 1 block from my crib. I'm learning from him when I'm 7, 8 years old. I'm 12 years old. I'm DJing in a bar.
So can you tell me what the general modus operandi or just the general operation of what it takes to keep that operation going on your nights in terms of what you're doing from Saturday to Thursday night, like flyers, calls, managers, money?
I never dealt with managers. I never dealt with promoters. I never dealt with booking agents. All of the artists hang out with me. Before Latin Quarters, I was like the hip-hop concierge of New York.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? On a Friday, Saturday night, I'm hanging with Curtis Blow, Orange Juice Jones, Run DMC, the Fat Boys, Houdini, all these people are calling me. Yo, Dice, where the party at? I'd be like, hold on, let me see. Oh, tonight popping at the Fun House. I'll go to the club early, let them know who I got coming later. And when they
so
come.
So you go to other bars and lure them?
Yep.
So there was no, like, calling Kara Lewis or any?
Nah, we didn't do none of that. We dealt directly with the artists. They didn't have to pay no manager. They didn't have to pay no booking agent. And, like, you're already hanging out at the club, right? You drinking. You got a girl. You want to go to the hotel. You roll up. Hey, yo, Dice, what you put me on? I'd be like, all right.
And it was just, like, easy as that?
I'll go to Mike Goldberg and say, yo, Mike, Just Dice want to rock. He was like, cool. I was like, let's give him 800. He'd be like, okay. No hotel, no limo. He's right here, right now. Here, go ahead. So we didn't really even have to book artists. They already was in the club. You know, and then you couldn't touch us. You show up Friday or Saturday, Mike Tyson's hanging out, Bobby Brown's in there hanging out. The Cosby Kids are in there hanging out.
Yeah, he talked
you know,
about it too.
Chris Rock's in there hanging out. Mm-hmm. You know, and every major and independent artist in New York is there. There was no place else to be.
Yeah, I think on this show, Paradise, you should know that I think, where are we at, 20 guests? At least 20 guests on this podcast alone have told Latin Quarter stories. And most of those people that you've already named.
Mm-hmm. I got one that y'all haven't spoken to. Who was the coat check girl?
Heather.
We
Heather
did.
Hunter.
We had she lived there.
What?
Yeah, she told us.
Girl. Matter of fact, she might have kickstarted.
She was one of the earliest.
Yeah. She might have kickstarted.
But she told us she
Latin
lived there. And we were like, what? Yep. You lived in the Latin Quarter?
Yeah, she literally lived in the Latin Quarter.
And she was homeless, and she used to sneak in the club. But I just let her in anyway. And here's something that most people didn't know. At the time she was homeless, she was in an art program in the Village for homeless youth. And her teacher and mentor was Keith Haring.
What?
Wow.
What?
Crack is
whack. And to this day,
she didn't tell
what?
Me that.
Heather's art is better than Keith Haring.
Dude, her entire apartment is just like a bunch of sculptures.
I thought she was a photographer. I didn't even
that
know.
Too. She's a sculptor and a painter. And her paintings, you could tell they have Keith Haring influence, but they're just so more alive and compelling.
Her apartment's damn near a museum, yo.
You
like
know?
Just nothing but just murals and sculptures and all those things.
So you had no idea, fast forward, that what she was going to evolve into in the...
I had a little bit of a clue.
Okay. Okay.
She was good with coats also.
Yo, what's up? This is Fonte, Fontigolo from Team Supreme. Black representation in media is very important to me. I think it's important to have our stories told by people who look like us and who have shared in our common experiences. Some of my earliest influences were Donnie Simpson. I would also say Tom Joyner, Angela Stribling, Sherry Carter. They were just people who told our stories with a lot of class and dignity and were big inspirations to me. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcast, The Center Black Voices. It's NPR Noir. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR. Wherever you get podcasts.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking.
I mean, my whole house? Well, no, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at Airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I wanted to ask you about X-Clan, man.
Yeah.
And like how y'all formed.
At Latin Quarters.
Really?
Yeah.
From Brother Jay and Professor X.
So you guys were just regular dressing cats and then you formed
right.
Latin.
I was never no regular dressing dude. Flip through that book.
I'm looking. guys went through a streetwear that morphed into.
You see the cover?
Yes.
That's me.
Then I know this. Then you morphed into.
Let me see.
Dapper Danism. But yeah, I do want to know.
And now the crystals where the, and the stones. Yeah.
Yeah, now you're in your shaman phase, which is awesome. Yeah, but how did the band formed?
I was working at the Latin Quarter.
Okay.
And Lumumba, Professor X, the overseer, a.k.a. Lumumba Carson, he called Heidi Smith from Rush Productions earlier in the day, and he asked her if he could get some of their groups to perform at a fundraiser for an anti-drug concert in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And she was like, no, we don't do that kind of thing. You know, he's like, really? She was like, yeah, you need to find artists who are more young and independent, you know, because our artists do concert series and we don't do charity like that. Right. So she said, I'll tell you what, go to Latin Quarters and see Paradise. He knows all the new artists and he'll probably be able to help you put a show together. She called me, put him on a guest list, and he showed up one day and I let him in free and he wound up becoming my partner because he talked to me, he saw the energy that we had at the club, and I helped him do an event in Prospect Park, Brooklyn, and I brought half the artists from the Latin Quarter to the park, including Stetsasonic, Ultra Magnetic, Boogie Down Productions. It was crazy. We had like 40, 50,000 people show up in the park. No violence. And we tore it down and raised a whole bunch of money for the anti-crack organization that we was working with. And from that moment, he was like, Paradise, if we could bring this youthful energy to my father's movement, we could change everything. And I was like, yeah, whatever. We're going to make money? He was like, I hope so. And I'm like, cool. So he took me to the Slave Theater on Fulton Street in Bed-Stuy. And Reverend Al Sharpton used to own that theater and do rallies there.
Okay.
So the day I went to meet his father, Sonny Carson, they were doing a rally there. And I walked through the door and I thought I had stepped into a time machine or a Saturday Night Live skit. Because all the elders was in there. They had big silver afros and they was wearing dashikis. And here I am. I got hazel contact lenses, Jerry curl, shit. Diamond ring.
Hazel
I got a fur coat
lenses,
on,
Paradise.
A Louis Vuitton tam, a Louis Vuitton sweater.
Oh, Lord.
You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
I had some brown shark skin suit pants, you know? So I go in there and I'm looking at them like they was in costumes. I'm all costumed out myself, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Lumumba takes me over to introduce me to his father. He says, Brother Sonny, this is my homeboy Paradise I was telling you about.
Mm-hmm.
Sonny stares at me without saying nothing, looks me in my eyes, then he looks, follows down head to toe, and then he looks at me and says, what kind of name is Paradise for a nigga?
What?
I said, well, actually, it's not a name. it's an invocation of my goals. I'm trying to achieve paradise in my life. So every time someone says that name, it reminds me of my goals. He smiled, did a deep laugh. He said, oh, you a smart nigga too, huh? I'll tell you what. You see that door that you walked in? If I was you, I'll walk out that door fast as I came in here, because if you stick around here, we're going to mess up everything you think you know. Hmm. I was like, really? He was like, yeah. I was like, I think I'll stick around for a minute. And he smiled at me and gave me this deep belly laugh. Sonny Carson had Mufasa's voice. Mm. You know what I'm saying? When Sonny speak, you know, the police and anybody else do that. Ooh. Sonny Carson was no joke, baby. Rest in peace, my elder.
I literally didn't know that that was his son.
Yeah. Yes.
And now it makes sense.
Yeah, Sonny Carson, Lumumba Carson.
Was he right about what your life and how you should have walked out? Did it change?
Hell yeah. And the beautiful thing about it is him or the elders never mentioned my hazel contacts. Mm-hmm. They never mentioned my golden diamonds or the flamboyant way I dressed. They just responded to my intelligence and my promotion and marketing skills. And they just taught me who I was. So I got rid of the costume on my own. I didn't need it anymore.
How did Brother Jay, he was just one of my favorite MCs, man. He had just that voice.
No, it's like, so.
Yeah, yeah, working on the first album, man, like how did that come about?
Sugar Shaft used to be one of the Violators.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay.
He used to hang with Chris Lighty and them dudes with Red Alert. And he was one of the guys that would carry Red's crates of records from the radio station to the Latin Quarter. One day, you know, he was on the subway, the 2 train, going to Brooklyn, and I was on the same train. We got off the train at the same stop. We looked at each other. I was like, yeah, where you live? He said, I live right around the corner. I said, yeah, I live right here. So he stopped going to the Latin Quarter with Red Alert and started riding with me. And we became really good friends. And he kept telling me about his homeboy, Brother Jay, who was really good as a rapper and all this. Now, I really wasn't working with artists on that level anymore, developing them. But him and Sugar Shaft was like 17 years old. And I kind of let them hang with me.
Wait, he was 17 with that voice?
Brother Jay.
Motherfucker sounded like my dad.
Right. Wrote to the East Blackwoods when he was 17 years old. And spit it when he was 18. How about that?
Wow.
So when people make excuses and say, oh, dudes are young, and I know.
But that's like, with X-Clan to me, I just looked at him like, oh, okay, 40-year-old people.
Yeah, they was old. They was old. Like, they was.
Y'all look like my cool-ass uncles.
Professor X was probably your cool-ass uncle.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what I mean? He was
but
older than us.
But it's just the authority.
Yeah, nah.
Yeah, yeah, no, that stuff. Yeah. I didn't think I was older than one of y'all. Damn.
East, yeah. My brother to the east, my brother.
Definitely. Brother Jay and Sugar Shaft for my little brothers.
Man.
Since you mention it, now, one of our most infamous Latin Quarter guests, Sir, MC Search.
Oh, get the okay. Okay.
You still searching for that guy? Oh. Where you go?
Look, because you got no the smoke. Show with the bright,
right. So. But wait. But no. But this also involves Pete as well, because it just hit me when I brought the EP, the Cactus EP.
Mm-hmm.
3 Strikes 5,000. There were some shots fired at the X-Clan organization. And then, of course, I forget the song where you guys start with Pop Goes the Weasel.
Oh, yeah.
What was the unspoken, indirect, non-passive-aggressive shots fired between those clans? And I guess also, if you want to add it.
It's a thin line between love and hate.
But also, today, when I was listening to Sex and Violence, there were some shots fired there, too. Like, so wait, Build what destroy, happened between... Yeah.
When I first met Prime Minister Pete Nice, he was 17 years old. And he was going to Boys and Girls High School. And he was managed by a gentleman named Robert Lumumba Carson, Professor X before X-Clan.
Really?
And he was in a group called Sin Quanon.
And, isn't
right. And then once Professor X met me, Now he had access to KRS-One, Big Daddy Kane, Just Dice. He neglected the groups he already was managing, right? Which Pete Nice was one of them. So MC Search was hanging at the Latin Quarter with me. And Pete Nice came to the Latin Quarter with Professor X. So Pete got frustrated because they didn't get any run or no focus. So Pete went to Lumumba and said, hey, Def Jam is interested in signing me. If you're not going to do nothing with me, could you release me? And Professor X laughed him out the door and released him. Def Jam's going to sign you. And Russell pulled the Beastie Boys 2.0. He took two independent artists that they were interested in and created Third Base. And Search was a cool dude, mm-hmm. but he exaggerated a lot. And he was very popular at Latin Quarter.
Okay.
But he was not popular at Latin Quarter for rapping.
Okay.
He got popular at Latin
as
Quarter.
As a dancer?
No.
Oh.
As a joke. I used to host the shows. Me and Red Alert and Biz Markie would snap on each other to warm the crowd up. And there was this real fat 6'3" dude in the crowd that I called him Heavy, right? This dude was like butter and ice on the dance floor. He was so big, but he was so smooth. And so I would always pull him up on the stage to warm the crowd up. And while he would dance, Red Alert would play some joints, and I'd be like, go, fat boy, go, fat boy. And the whole crowd would be screaming, go, fat boy, go, fat boy. Mm-hmm. And MC Search came running, Dice, can I go? I was like, oh, God, here we go. Because MC Search thought he could dance, but he had two left feet. He was cool with us. We liked him. He was our dude. He was a great guy, but he could not dance.
He would dance like Stretch.
Hell no. He would try and we would just.
I mean, I'll see him do the Running Man and the Kiki Big Daddy Kane thing. Okay.
With two left feet.
Face. Look, I'm trying to be Switzerland here.
Right, I feel you. I mean, I'm working on it myself.
I got love for Search and I got love for Pete Nice.
Latin
as well.
Quarter was where brothers was dancing in that club.
Okay.
Dude, you're not their level, period, ever. So he would run on stage and Red would play Do the James and I would go white boy, go, and the crowd would go crazy and they loved him.
And back then it was a novelty to see the white guy with rhythm.
Right.
So he took advantage of that.
Okay. Right.
I see.
Greatly. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But then as he became third base, he seemed like he was trying to be a brother and he was going too far with it as far as we was concerned. Like when the camera zoomed up to the back of his head, he turned around like, it's the other man. We was like, what? What are you talking about, dude? Like, what are you doing? You know, so he was the ultimate culture vulture. But he was accepted because he hung out with us and we accepted him hanging with us, you know? Then he did the group with, wound up being our good friend, MF Doom. Oh. And the logo was a coon face, and we didn't like that.
Oh, KMD.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it was a lot of cultural problems that we was having problems with.
Amir mentioned the Hip Hop Museum in his roll call. I just wanted to touch on that a little bit for our listeners who may not know what's going
on. Wait, I'll get there eventually.
Right. He still want to get to the part where Kenny Parker just did a blog.
Right. I'll get there. But wait, because you also didn't name the other four performers at the Latin Quarter. I was hoping to get the story of Melly Mel and the push-ups or the sit-ups. Oh,
Melly Mel was the Debo of the Latin Quarter. He was the filter. That's what I called him. If you got on stage and you was whack, Melly Mel was Sandman.
Really?
Self-appointed Sandman. Him and Busy B were the most arrogant dudes ever. They would come in the club throwing elbows at dudes. Get out the way. Get out the way. The champs is here. The champs is here. Ain't none of y'all getting no money tonight. And y'all ain't getting no pussy tonight. Because the champs is here. And you be on stage rocking, all of a sudden you hear the crowd going crazy. You like, ooh, I'm doing it tonight. And then you take a look to the side, and Melly Mel standing there with his shirt off.
God.
Muscle Simmons in his full glory. Then he started doing push-ups real quick while you trying to do a show. You like,
So he's working out on the side of the stage?
No, on the stage. He's on the stage with you now. Doing 50 push-ups.
Are you allowed to name some of the artists that he disrespected?
Who remembers them?
Right. Wait, so were there some artists that performed?
You never heard of them again. They disappeared. You he sure? Ate them.
All right.
And so he jumped on his feet, snatched the mic, and said, "Red Alert, put on some real hip hop. I'm tired of this bullshit." And then he would rock the house.
And never cause a fight. Nobody ever wanted to fight him after they...
Who you over? Right.
I'm just... Somebody think they a tough...
Man.
I got a knife, so he got muscles before it.
It was only a couple of dudes that had the balls or the size to deal with Melly Mel.
Okay.
Just Ice and King's Son.
Oh, shit.
They could handle him physically. But ain't nobody wanted to try that. Plus, he's the GOAT. It's Grandmaster Melly Mel. A child is born.
Damn.
You ain't got no wins there until one day Melly Mel jumped on the stage with that braggadocious, "I got $500. Anybody in here want it? Come get it right now. All y'all." He's looking at Run DMC and LL and all them like, and then you heard the crowd go crazy. And you look, and KRS-One was standing there like this.
Okay.
Now, it already was some friction between the last generation and the new generation.
Yes, yeah.
The first shots across the bow that was successful was none other than LL Cool J. LL was not having it. Cool Moe Dee, Ice-T, whoever. He was not intimidated. And if you went at LL, he coming back at you. The first shots across the old school bow was by LL Cool J. So he got it right here. It was right here, and it was bubbling.
Mm-hmm.
And then KRS-One dropped the nail in the coffin.
What happened that night? Like, can you describe, like, well, was it a song? Was it a verse?
No.
How did they battle?
I handed KRS-One the mic, and KRS-One did a freestyle. First he did this, everybody in the club that he had beef with, he dissed about four people before going at Mel. Roxanne Shanté. He went at MC Shan, of course.
Right.
Cool G Rap, even. You know, I'm a professional. This is not a demo. Chris threw a bunch of shots across the
bow. No.
Right.
Didn't even catch that. I am a professional. This is not
a... It's a demo. It's a demo. It's a demo.
I'm just catching that.
See what I'm saying? So Chris was already set up to be that next dude because he had just smashed Shan. Which was difficult to do because Shan was as popular as LL back in them days. Shan was not no easy nut to crack.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Shan was highly respected. And so KRS-One did a freestyle. He went at Mel. And then he said, "Hey, yo, who won this battle?" And dropped the mic. And the crowd went crazy. And Melly Mel, he was so angry, the crowd was like going for KRS-One. He didn't even rhyme yet. He started jumping up and down. "It's not fair. I didn't get to go yet. I didn't get to go." I said, "Come on, y'all. This is Melly Mel. You got to at least let the man spit." Melly Mel dug in that brilliant brain of his and came out with one of the dopest rhymes I ever heard. He was talking about spaceships and battling aliens and molecules and scientific facts, and he killed it. But the crowd was like, "Nope." Yeah. Boo! And some people cheered him, but KRS-One won the day. And from that day on, things started changing. You know, Big Daddy Kane got really ridiculous in there. Rakim came out of nowhere on him. "Check out my melody." You know, Eric B for President. Red Alert was banging that, like, over and over. It was a new day.
Well, okay. So what are the other three that you can name?
Other three that got dissed by Melly Mel?
No. Other three, like, life-changing performances that happened at the
Big Daddy Kane, man. Big Daddy Kane. When he first came out with Scoob and Scrap, He changed the game, bro. It was just, I mean, Heavy D and the Boys. Woo! When they rock Mr. Big Stuff at Latin Quarters, forget about it.
Really?
Yeah, man. Stetson Sonic performed with my man Bobby Simmons with the live drums.
Live drums?
Okay. Yeah. That was crazy. I mean, it was just so many amazing, amazing performances. Special Ed, you know, EPMD, bro. Oh, my God. They used to tear the Latin Quarter down. And then, out of nowhere, came the Native Tongues. The Tribe Called Quest, the Jungle Brothers, De La Soul.
So that could fly there?
Moni Love. It was born there.
Okay, I'm only asking that because it seems to me that the Latin Quarter seems more
hard
of the
no.
of would, the Dapper Dan variety. And then suddenly here comes like...
No Backpackers.
Yeah, like... I would figure like they were the nerds and dweebs of,
me too.
So they were welcome with.
Yeah, because they were already people who hung out at the Latin Quarters. 90% of the artists that broke in Latin Quarters was always in the crowd. Kid and Play was in the crowd at Latin Quarters. Their name was the Fresh Force, Kid Cool Out and Playboy. And they had a song called Or for Rock Me Amadeus.
I was going to say, please don't say Amadeus. Then you're like,
yeah, they sampled Rock Me and did a song off of Rock Me Amadeus, and they had another song called She's a Skeezer. That sounded which is like what, Adidas.
Okay.
She's a Skeezer.
Pops told me about that. Okay,
with the same beat.
For 3 days later.
Yeah, but then they saw the IOU and the JAC dancers. They changed their hairstyles. They changed the way that they dress. And somehow, the dance that was being done at the Latin Quarters became the Kid and Play Kickstep.
So all those dances were born there. We're talking about like the Steve Martin, the Bismarck,
yeah, the WAP. Oh my God. Dude used to kill when he performed. You know who else killed at Latin Quarters?
Who?
Schoolie D.
What? I bet.
Really?
Yes. And remember, this was New Jack City, New York.
Okay.
You know? This was around the time of Larry Davis and the Central Park Five and Yusef Hawkins murder. So there was a tension in the young black people at the time also. And we were angry at a lot. You know, apartheid was going on. Mm-hmm. Nelson Mandela was still in jail. You know what I'm saying? So... there was a consciousness that took over the club because the Zulu Nation and the beginnings of the Black Watch movement and the 5% Nation was heavy in the club. So we was all about the fifth element, knowledge, wisdom, and understanding at the same time we was creating this music.
So that is official. I was wondering, when you look up hip-hop sometimes, okay, the fifth element is knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. All right.
Okay.
I feel like it came much later.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Can you, all right, since the sound system was ungodly.
Yes.
What did you guys think when y'all first heard Rebel Without a Pause? Because I heard it 2 a.m. on a radio with the volume down. And of course, like, you know, I'm talking about clock radio. I can't imagine what it is to hear this tea kettle noise of Public Enemy.
That song saved Public Enemy's career because Public Enemy got booed off the stage at Latin Quarters and their first show. Grandmaster Melly Mel.
He was on the side doing push-ups?
No. He couldn't get to the stage, but he was in the crowd heckling them the whole time. That shit ain't hip hop. They on stage with Uzis and shit. We trying to stop the violence. What is this? Russell Simmons, you need to sign Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, putting all this bullshit on stage. Da 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 da. I had to literally pull Melly Mel off the dance floor and explain to him what the S1Ws were and why they had the plastic Uzis. But then they came later with Rebel Without a Pause. And guess what it was? A hip-hop dance classic. You put that record on, the IOU and the JAZ dancers break their necks in that club off it. And that inspired Chuck to step up the tempo, and he realized, as you get up and dance at the LQ.
Right. I get it. I see it now. I see it now. So the next question I want to know is, why did it end so early?
Monday. Location. It was sitting on that property that was way too valuable for them to keep just letting us little nigglets have.
Ain't been a black club there since.
Yeah, exactly. They built a hotel.
Right. Oh, which one?
The Renaissance. Yep.
Okay. We used to stay there. Wow. Okay.
Yep. The Union Square Club had closed. So all the crazy ass Brooklyn niggas ain't have nowhere to hang out no more. So they came uptown to the Latin Quarters and they turned the Latin Quarters into the OK Corral.
All right. So is the myth of Brooklyn real? I.e., like, we just want to party, and here come Brooklyn wilding out again.
Hell yeah, that shit was true. Because it wasn't just Ghost Stetson that set them off. That was the second song. There was another song that was more of a trigger than that.
Which was?
Brooklyn's in the House.
By D.C.
Cutmaster D.C.
D.C. Oh, Brooklyn, yeah. Funk, Funky Fresh.
Brooklyn, Funk, Funky Fresh.
So any Brooklyn song Brooklyn is just then going to...
It's triggered. It's 50 Cent and the Supreme Team and the Hollis Crew and a whole powder keg of different.
So they were all paid to get in.
Yeah, they were paid to get in.
Just Yoke and Steel Chains and.
No, well, at first, I mean, it took a while. See, because 50 would come to me. He respected me, and I would let them in free, give them drink tickets, treat them like they were stars, too.
Can you explain who 50 was? And no, we're not talking about Curtis Jackson.
Nah, he was a little gangster-ass thug from Brooklyn.
Okay.
Who was one of the original knuckleheads that he had no respect for nobody, not even himself. And he would come to the club with 2 guns and a bulletproof vest on. I would let him keep
y'all
the vest.
Y'all wouldn't let him in?
I would, look, put it this way.
Okay, right.
If you let him in, he could control the other ones that's lesser than him. So instead of going wild, now they had something to lose.
Yeah.
Now they had status. And they wouldn't just run up on somebody and rob them. They would come to me first and be like, yo, Dice, is that your man? And I'd be like, yeah. Damn, man. Tell him he can't be coming up in here like that, man. Yeah.
Organized crime versus disorganized crime.
What would a walking target look like?
LL Cool J.
Tell me the story.
Jam Master J.
I heard that story about dragging on the floor, but he held on to the chain, I heard.
Now, he didn't drag the floor. His chain is solid. It don't have no clasp. Jam Master J had the best chain in hip-hop.
But Run DMC wasn't, like, royalty, like, untouchable?
Shit.
Or is it like, we got to test you,
the
big you are?
Jam Master J had the Hollis crew with him. Hurricane and about 20, 25 other ones. So it was the first time it was an even match. Dude, 50 tried to snatch Jay's chain. It don't pop. Jay went with the chain, and Jay is no slouch.
Right.
Right? I went out and pulled Jay out of the melee, and he literally fought me. And when I looked in his face, he said, "Yo, Dice, my people is out there." I let him go. He went right back out there. You know, who am I to tell him? You know what I mean? But, Jam Master J, let me say something about him. He was the most humble and wonderful human being ever. You know, you go to the club, Jay would be at a club, no security, no homeboys. He'd be out on tour. You find Jam Master J with a 40 in the hood, in the projects, 4 o'clock in the morning, smoking and drinking and telling stories and jokes with dudes he don't even know. And he had the total hood pass because he was Jam Master J. He was that dope.
Yeah.
He taught me how to act once I became popular.
Can we talk about the Hip Hop Museum?
Yes, Steve.
Yeah.
Now, I'm told that you were collecting artifacts and whatnot since 79.
78.
Okay, so
yeah.
How did you know?
I was a kid.
How did you know instantly I should keep this?
My brother Michael Green, Coach Green, he was a baseball and football coach at DeWitt Clinton High School in the Bronx. And my brother was 4 years older than me. And he did everything to influence me. I didn't respect or understand my brother when I was young because he wasn't a fighter. I had to fight every day. But as I got older, everything I do and everything I know really came from my brother. A photographer, a writer, an artist, an illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
But most importantly, he collected stamps and coins. I wasn't into that. Like, get out of here with that.
Okay.
Then he started collecting baseball cards, football cards, and comic books. Mm-hmm. That's when I lost my mind, you know, because I was an avid reader. And comic book collectors and comic book readers, it's like oil and water. We really didn't mix. So I start collecting my own comics. Mm-hmm. And then here comes hip-hop flyers. Grandmaster Flash, Cool DJ Herc, the Hercalords, you know, Grand Wizard Theodore. It was like walking Marvel heroes in my hood.
Who were doing those flyers? Like, was there
Buddy Esquire, a whole bunch of good at Phase 2. Buddy Esquire and Phase 2 were the two most popular ones, but there was a whole host of people making flyers back then, and they were beautiful when the hip-hop universe was like the Marvel and DC universe to me, you know? Mm-hmm. So they would have cartoon characters. I got a flyer with Iron Man on it, one with Spider-Man on it, one with Muhammad Ali on it, you know, fly girls and nice cars. It was amazing to me, so I kept them. And me and my homeboy kid Zeke, we started trading with each other, and it just became a thing in my hood that we would collect hip-hop flyers. And later on, it became everything with hip-hop on it. Yo MTV rap cards, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Magazines, Yo, Rap Masters, The Source, Double XL. If it had anything about hip-hop, I was hip-hop's biggest fan. I won it.
So were you just naturally a pop culture junkie that just, you know, part... Like, I'm collecting stuff now. I don't know why I'm collecting it. I'm not saying to myself, like, okay, one day I'm going to have a museum. But, like, now, I mean, I'm going hard on...
Right.
I went hard on Herc's auction. Like,
okay,
now
good.
We're seeing the auction stuff.
Oh, yeah. And
so I'm like, I'm doing it. I guess I figured, like, okay, maybe when I'm 60 or 70, it's I'll have these artifacts to pass on to a museum or that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. In your mind, are you saying, like, one day I'm going to open up the hip-hop museum and I'm having these artifacts there?
No, I didn't even consider that. I just knew what I liked and I loved, and I just catered to myself. I love myself, so I tried to surround myself with beautiful things and things that make me feel good. I was a little ashy-skinned, nappy-headed, dark-skinned kid in the South Bronx with holes in the bottom of my shoe. Mm-hmm. And hip-hop gave me my self-esteem.
How do you preserve everything through the years with all the floods and robberies and everything that everybody goes through with moving 100 times?
I never had a flood. I never got robbed. My dad still lived in the same apartment that we lived in since 1980.
Wow. Okay. Well, there's the answer there, right there. Yeah.
Yep. Damn. Okay. So
we had stability.
So let me know what
closet space.
Okay. Now I'm gonna really ask the question that I always ask and no one answers.
Yeah.
You're given 1 minute to grab 3 artifacts, and the rest you'll never see again. What 3 things are you grabbing?
My original crown that I created, the first crown of X-Clan. My wooden stick that I carved with a lion's face in the middle of a morph between a lion and a man. That staff is called the Iron Lion Zion.
You and made that staff?
Yes, okay. Yes.
You carved too?
Yeah. Oh, shit. Yeah, that's why they call me the architect, baby.
I Paradise now see
the architect.
That. I see that.
You know,
okay.
Yeah.
Did you have dreams to be an actual architect in terms of?
I went
of...
to Brooklyn Tech to be an architect.
Okay.
Wow. And I dropped out in the 10th grade because I couldn't go through high school with holes in my shit like I did junior high. My parents are from the South. My dad, I told him what I wanted, and he said, hey, he walked me to the front door and said, everything you want is right outside this door. Everything you need, I got it in here. Go get what you want. So I said, okay, I'm going to go get it. I went and I dropped out of high school. And within 2 years, I was making more money than my mother and my father combined legally.
Where are your parents from?
Where?
North Carolina.
What
Where?
City?
I was born in a little town called Washington, North Carolina.
What?
Is yeah, that next
little
door to you?
Washington. Not
yeah,
little
I'm
Washington.
In Little Washington.
Yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So I live. I grew up in Fayetteville. I mean, I lived all over North Carolina. Fayetteville, Red Springs, Robinson County, grew up in Greensboro. Live in Raleigh, but nah, man, that's so dope. I had homies from Little Washington.
So I was born in 1964 in North Carolina, Freedom Summer. And my mother decided when I was 4 years old that she didn't want me, my brother, and sister to grow up picking cotton and tobacco. So she followed her sister Helen, my aunt, to Harlem. And she stayed in Harlem with my aunt and sent me, my brother, and sister to live in the Bronxdale Projects with my aunt's daughter, her niece, Susie Davis. And my little cousin who lived with us in Disco King Mario's building, his name is Aaron Davis. He wound up becoming the welterweight champion of the world, mm-hmm. Aaron Superman Davis.
Okay.
And he knocked Mark Breland out to take the belt.
Steve, you're a sports expert. So just...
Well, I love hip-hop and sports. I think hip-hop was a sport to us, too.
It is.
You know
and
what I mean?
And surviving it is,
yeah.
is key. Wait, you didn't name the third thing, the third artifact that you would save.
Yeah. That first flyer with hip, the first time hip-hop's mentioned on, it's pretty cool.
Right.
Yeah, but...
There's more important things?
Yeah.
Okay, well, record-wise...
I'm just saying...
Record-wise...
You're talking about things that I own or hypothetical?
Well, things that... I mean, like... Treasures. I mean...
Dude. I have so much in my collection. I'm not... Bismarck status with my collection, but the hip hop part of my collection is bigger than business hip hop collection.
See, he's the one that got me into when I saw business stuff, I was like, oh, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
Spend my money. You got to spend your money on something. So that's the thing.
Yeah.
Artifact, historical artifact wise, what do you have? Jeff just shared with me that he has the records from Grandmaster Flash used in Wild Style.
Dope.
The Bob
I still James have a bunch of my original crates that I DJed with since the 70s in the Bronx. still have my original vinyl on my breakbeats.
Okay.
You know, I have the big red, black, and green flag that X-Clan used to perform with and that we used to march in the streets of Brooklyn with Sonny Carson with, you know. I have a cutout of the Nas Pharoah head.
From I Am? Oh, yeah. The I Am record cover. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I have the cutout of Master P.
What?
You know, I've got the Master P doll that goes,
Right, okay.
You know, I got so much artifacts, bro.
I do want to know, when do you feel as though the museum will have its grand opening?
Fourth quarter 2024, first quarter 2025.
And the location?
Right where it is, right in the boogie down Bronx, 149th Street in Bronx Point, baby. Right on the Harlem River.
Well, brother, this has been long overdue.
Yeah.
Thank you for everything. Sharing with
Sorry
us.
Sorry we didn't have more time. You know, I didn't really get to tell y'all no stories.
No, I know. Right? That's crazy.
But it's all good.
No, this is beautiful,
yes,
man. And we thank you for coming on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so on behalf of Fontigolo, I'm Pay Bill, Sugar Steve, and Laia, this is Questlove. This is great Paradise Gray.
Yeah.
Support hip-hop culture. Collect your artifacts. Don't dispose of things that you don't know will be, you know, one man's trash is next man's treasure.
Oh, yeah.
Keep telling the history.
Yes. And share stories and
keep
share
building
history.
The history, because while it's good that we celebrated the 50th anniversary of hip-hop.
Make history.
Now it's our time to plot the next 50 years of hip-hop.
There you go.
And yes. To support young artists with the real support that we need to give them. And we need to stop being the old man sitting on the porch telling them to get off our lawn. Hip-hop was created by children, and children will always rule hip-hop. So if you're old and you feel like, oh, I can't understand what they're saying, well, maybe they're not talking to your ass.
Ooh!
Mic drop.
Boom!
And there it is, ladies and gentlemen. Paradise Gray. All right, we'll see y'all next quarter. Thank you.
This is Sugar Steve. Thank you for listening to Questlove Supreme. This podcast is hosted by Amir Questlove Thompson, Laia St. Clair, Fonte Coleman, Sugar Steve Mandel, and unpaid Bill Sherman. The executive producers are Amir Questlove Thompson, Sean G., and Brian Calhoun. Produced by Brittany Benjamin, Jake Payne, and Laia St. Clair. Edited by Alex Conroy. Produced for iHeart by Noel Brown and Mike Johns. Audio engineering by Graham Gibson at iHeart's LA studio.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeart Radio.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.